So, Summer, last episode, we left off with the whole idea of total compensation or total compensation value. And we started talking about it from the point of view of a company. I want to look at it from the point of view of an employee. How do I understand my total compensation value to an employer so that I don't undersell myself?
That's a fantastic question. And I've got two thoughts on it. So first thought is gaining greater understanding of the differences in data points that employers and employees are looking at. So as an employee, you're primarily limited to the data that you can find related to how you think you should be paid through crowdsourced data sites such as salary.com or payscale.com. And I think those are definitely tools that are out there, but they have some caveats. From an employer perspective, they're able to purchase published, reputable survey data. That's what we purchase in our compensation consulting practice as well, that gives a more robust and deeper perspective into how jobs are paid and what the pay mix looks like and a whole bunch of details. Crowdsourced data, on the other hand, one of the main caveats there is as an employee, you can go in and key in anything. So the data may not always be the most accurate. Additionally, employers, I don't know if you knew this or not, but sites such as Glassdoor.com, employers can pay to edit that data. So from that standpoint, there may be some biases to such data sources. So it can be a bit challenging as an employee, but I'd collect whatever input you can and then also understand how your employer is determining whether or not a job is paid competitively. The second part that I wanted to address is thinking about as an employee. If you recall me mentioning on the previous episode, there's more than just cash compensation. So as an employee, you know, thinking about that full total reward package, what is it that I, as an employee, am seeking in my offering? And not to say that an employee is going to have the ability to fully customize, you know, I want this benefit and I want, you know, this much in base pay, but it can help an employee to think about, okay, what's of critical importance to me? And then which employment opportunities can satisfy those needs? So I like to refer to the concept as a total rewards hierarchy of needs, similar to a Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you think back to your, you know, psychology class during college or high school, whatever it might be. So at the baseline or at the bottom, we've got compensation. Beyond that could be benefits, life balance and wellness, followed by inclusion, all the way up to, you know, performance management recognition, career development, career growth and purpose. So, you know, as an employee, which of these things are of critical importance to you? Are some more important than others? And then what employment opportunities are going to satisfy those key drivers in terms of, you know, the total rewards package that's going to appease you.
And that goes back to knowing who you are so you can be it. One of the bumper sticker sayings of nonfiction branding is truly know who you are so you can be it. And part of that is knowing what you value most. For some people, it would be if you tell me I can have 6 weeks of paid vacation a year and you're paying me 75% of market rate, I'm okay with that because vacation and the ability to travel is more important to me. Another one might be that you have offices around the country or even the world, and you're open to a career path for me that would include me being able to travel or actually relocate. For some people, relocation is a joy and something to be prized. Well, for other people, it's something to avoid like the plague. You have to know who you are and what you value most. And guess what? A whole lot of people are saying gross dollar amount is not the thing I value most. It could be, I want to have flex hours so that I can pick up my kid after school and maybe have 2 hours working from home, or, you know, or the working from home thing, you know, which is hugely important to a whole lot of people. especially those who are perhaps non-traditional employees. If I'm going to define a traditional employee, it would be I'm there for, you know, whatever the hours are, 8 to 5 every day, and I'm there never asking for anything other than that, and I'm happy to be there for 30 years, and then I retire. Do those employees exist anymore? Well, they probably do, but there's a whole lot fewer of them. And now knowing what your total value is, like I like to say that nonfiction branding is your value plus your values equals your nonfiction brand. It's what you value, but it's also the values that define you. Knowing that, is that a conversation that people should feel they can have with someone at QTI if they were looking for a new opportunity? Could they say, yeah, I'm looking to move, but I really would like this style of job or opportunity? Is that the type of what if conversation that you might have with people?
Yeah, absolutely. So in our both recruiting and staffing business, what's of critical importance is that we're finding opportunities for candidates as well as for employers that are going to be a solid fit. And so it's important to dig into those conversations of what is motivating an individual, you know, to apply, what are the things that they value, what are their values, and really unearthing that so that we can make sure it's as best a fit as possible. It's almost like we're in the matchmaking business, but for careers. And one thing I want to share as well is, as you're thinking about, you know, what it is that's of value, if you flip it to the employer perspective, it's super important for employers to be asking their employees, what is it that you value? What is it that is motivating you or driving you? And then regularly assessing their total rewards offerings to align with what is going to motivate employees. So you talked about the change in generations. Now we've got, you know, 4 generations in the workforce. How does that evolve what our benefit offerings are, as an example? There's so many things that need to be drilled into there. And what I'll say is those that do this well are making sure that what they're offering has a purpose. And I'd say the worst thing an employer can do is just add everything under the sun, you know, just because now we have ping pong tables, our employees are going to be more motivated to perform. But if that's not something that your employees are looking for, say there it's more of a heads down culture, that might not be, you know, something that should be offered.
Well, it's funny you say the ping pong table, because I come from the world of advertising agencies, and every single agency I've ever been at has foosball tables or pool tables, ping pong tables, and all they're used for is collating presentations the night before the big presentation. You know, it's literally, that's where the reams of paper go to get piled together the right way. You know, no one uses them because they don't feel they can. All of a sudden, I'm outside the conference room playing pool and other people are in there trying to get work done. It's a fake compensation thing. Now, I do appreciate the offices that allow dogs, because I personally love dogs. Mm-hmm. But guess what? A lot of people are allergic to dogs. So that's a potentially fraught benefit as well. So again, you have to really know who you are, what you value. And I think it's really incumbent upon you to know that before you have a conversation with an employer. If you have a very smart employer like the one you talked about, who actually asks you, like, what do you value? What do you want? Or what can make you a satisfied employee here? If your answer is, I haven't thought about it, that's not a very good answer. You really need to have an answer for that very smart question.
Completely agree. And I think also it's important for employees to not necessarily wait for the employer to ask them those questions. If they feel strongly that something should happen, vocalize it, raise the idea, put together the business case. I'm one that if you see an opportunity to make something better, put that business case out there and go for it. Don't wait for somebody to ask you the question.
Again, it goes back to that conversation we had earlier about leaning in, you know, actively being a part of this. It's a bit of a dance, but that's okay, because if you're a dancer who knows your steps and you're with another good dancer, you're going to have a great dance together. And ideally, that's what you're doing. You're trying to find someone to be the perfect dance partner for you and your career. not only the career you have now, but the career you want to have. And how can you know that career that you want to have? You really need to think about it ahead of time. I like to use continuums as a mental game. You know, you've got one end over here, one end over here. And on one end, in this case, I'm thinking bureaucrats, someone who would be perfectly happy at the Department of Motor Vehicles. And then on the other side is a pure entrepreneur who doesn't know where the money's coming to pay anybody this week. Everybody's on that continuum somewhere. Have you, as a person, figured out where you are on that continuum from pure bureaucrat to pure entrepreneur? That's a great thing to know ahead of time, because if you like to know on Wednesdays I do this, guess what? You're closer to one side of the thing than the other. And guess what? Companies need both. A great example is just kind of painting with a broad brush. Salespeople are known for being, I'm pure entrepreneur. I'm never going to be in the office. I'm always going to be on the road. The only time you're going to hear from me is when I put in my expense reports. Oh, and here's a new contract, or here's a new client, here's a new customer. And don't expect me to come in 9 to 5. Don't expect me to take weekends off. Don't expect me to do anything your way, because I'm going to do it the way that sales happen. And by the way, every sale happens differently depending on who the customer is. Good salespeople, pure entrepreneurs. But then again, you don't want your CPAs or your compliance officers to be entrepreneurial. You want them to be buttoned down in a lead-lined bunker when it comes to being absolutely right when it comes to compliance with federal issues, taxation, etc. So you need both. So neither one of you are wrong. You're either true to yourself or not. I like to say there's no good brand or bad brand. There's only a true brand and a false brand. For an entrepreneur to say that, nope, I can be buttoned down. Sure, I can be here every day. No, you aren't going to last there. And someone else, oh, I'm a buttoned down person, but I can go out and sell and I can go to client meetings and sure, I can do that. You're not going to be successful. Know who you are so you can be it. And there you go again, D.P. Knuton's drinking game. Go ahead and drink. But it's true, right?
I completely agree. And not only is it true from an employee perspective, you need to be true to who you are and your employer is going to be able to realize that. And if you're not true to who you are, it's going to be hard for you to be satisfied. But additionally, it's true from an employer perspective. I mean, employees are going to read through if you say you have a flexible work policy, but you penalize those that aren't in the office by missed out opportunities or things along those lines, then employees are going to perceive your brand as fictional, so to speak, not to say, you know, that it's not nonfiction.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
I'm thinking about a video I just saw of a huge hero of mine, Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia, the clothing manufacturer and outdoor equipment. And I saw a video on YouTube. All you have to do is look it up. It's got a very memorable name, Let My People Go Surfing. And it's all about how he created this billion-dollar company from a bunch of misfits who don't fit anywhere else. And he said that during the process of them scaling up their company, they brought in some, you know, you can have misfits, but they have to work together. So as a company scales, it's got to have systems and processes that work, so the efficiencies, et cetera, et cetera. So they brought in some business consultants and business psychologists to talk to their people. And when he sat down with them, he said that they looked at him and said, this is a very interesting workforce. None of them are employable anywhere else because they are completely independent operators. And it works for you and don't change a thing. But he has a very specific culture in his company. He's hired specifically people that fit within that culture. And guess what? Once they're there, they don't leave. And by the way, when he says, let my people go surfing, he means it. I once had a creative director above me when I was an associate creative director, and he defined himself as a windsurfer. And what he meant by that was he kept track of the weather like a weatherman. And the second there was wind, he was out on the reservoir windsurfing. And he told me once, I go even if I don't want to, because you can't call yourself a windsurfer if you don't go windsurfing. And you can only go windsurfing when there's wind. So when there's wind, I'm windsurfing. Well, that's Yvon Chouinard too. If there's surf, the surfers are out. Well, guess what? If there's powder up in the mountains, the powder skiers are out. And that's okay, because his only criteria is you get the work done. And because you've got independent self-operators, it works. That brand, Patagonia, knows who they are and they're being it. The people who work for Patagonia know who they are and they are being it. And that's why the dance that I kind of alluded to earlier between the company and employee works so well, because they both know who they are and are actively being it. Do you see and work with a lot of companies to help them define their, when you talk about total value compensation, things like that, do you work with them to actively get them to do the work to say, okay, you say this, but you do this. There's a difference. Can we reconcile these things together?
Absolutely. That's a fantastic question. And yes, we do. So what we do that through is the development of a total reward strategy and philosophy. And essentially what that is a document which outlines, you know, what an employer values, what they're trying to reward for, what the elements of their total rewards program entail, and the role and purpose of those elements, how they all fit together to accomplish this greater purpose. It includes other things too, like who they're competing with for talent. And so it's not about the document. It's about the exercise of going through that dialogue to discuss, you know, what all entail the total rewards program and why. Why are all these pieces fitted together, and are they working as effectively as they should? And the reason why that's so critical, and a lot of employers don't have such a strategy and philosophy document in place, but the reason why it's so critical to have that is because on average across organizations, 70% of operating expenses go toward your talent, your people. So that tends to be the largest expense, right? And just like with any other large financial investment, you want to make sure that you're maximizing the return on that investment.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I also want to say that I love the vocabulary that you use, because I have been calling it total compensation value or whatever, but you keep saying and saying it consistently, total rewards, total rewards. I love that, because again, I'm coming to you as a copywriter, someone who's used words, the nuance, flavor differences of words, the French vanilla versus vanilla of words throughout my entire career. And by saying it, it isn't compensation. It's a reward. You are placing yourself on an entirely different tier than those bottom trolling lawyers who are trying to get you compensated for your mesothelioma on late night TV. And consequently, you're reframing the conversation. It's not about compensation. It's about reward. Here's a treat for you, doggy. This is how we love you. It becomes this much bigger, better, positive, always positive conversation, not compensation. We're going to get the compensation you deserve for that motorcycle accident. No, it's not about compensation. It is about rewarding the behavior, the professionalism, the value that you offer a company. So I applaud you for that use of terminology and your incredibly consistent use of it.
Well, thank you. I too probably could inspire some drinking games if you were to go on QTI's social media and look at some of the videos of things we've done in regards to total rewards. I have a tendency to mention it quite frequently.
Well, let's talk about that. If people are interested in QTI and they go to the QTI website, what is there that they can take a look at, play around with?
Well, both our website as well as social media. So we're regularly out there posting on LinkedIn and Facebook and things along those lines. But they can see some highlights from my colleagues, including myself, related to quick thought pieces. They can also read some articles on trends out there related to total rewards, as well as recruiting and retention and employee engagement. I mean, these are all really important things for employers and employees to be thinking about.
And that website is qtigroup.com. So check that out. And I'm talking with Summer Rector, and that's spelled R-E-C-T-O-R. And I would absolutely invite you to check her out on LinkedIn and any other social platforms you use, which are, by the way, what social platforms do you use?
So I am regularly out there on LinkedIn. I am also out there on Facebook. And also, you know, I've got some presence on our QTI website as well.
Are you up for fielding questions, random questions from listeners who might be interested in all things QTI or total rewards compensation?
Of course. This is a huge passion of mine. As you know, personally, DP, I love to talk about this amazing field that I have the privilege of being in. And so I welcome any opportunities to interact with those who have questions. I'd say the easiest way to reach me is either through LinkedIn or through email at summer.rector. Again, that's R-E-C-T-O-R at qtigroup.com.
Well, there you have it. And if you're an employer listening to this podcast, QTI Group is an absolute fantastic organization to become acquainted with and ideally partner with, because I know they're going to hook you up with the very best people that you could possibly need. And again, some of the other service areas that you provide are things like, am I right in calling it outsourced HR? For people who don't have an HR department in their company, you guys can handle all that when it comes to compliance and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a professional employer, or a PEO organization, as it's called, that essentially co-employs employees, so that an employer, so for example, a small startup or a nonprofit where you want to focus in on what it is that your business is trying to achieve, and you want someone else to worry about the payroll, the benefits, to one, get you better bargaining power with benefits, so a more robust benefits package, as well as help you with some of those less fun items like compliance and employee relations. Those are all things that we can help with in our PEO business.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You can literally take a world-class engine, graft it onto your startup, and you don't have to worry about that stuff because you've got it handled. That's pretty darn cool. Anybody who's interested in getting more information about the QTI Group, by all means, connect with Summer. She's really cool. And if you're in the Madison, Wisconsin area, I'm sure you'll see her out and about, because I've seen you at several events and things like that as well. So connect with her on LinkedIn. If you've got specific questions, hit her up at her email address, which she gave you just a few seconds ago. And I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast and allowing me to ask these kind of 101 questions, and also for validating a lot of the stuff that we talk about here on the Nonfiction Brand podcast quite a bit, especially about the value of people creating their own personal brands via their own nonfiction, completely true, completely you stories. Because remember, if you're not telling your story, someone else is, and they might not like you. I'm DP Knute for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, and she is
Summer Rector. And thank you so much for having me, DP. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you so much. And remember, people, like, subscribe, refer, and most of all, review this podcast so other people can find us. I'm DP Knute for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.